Hello and welcome to Pure Championship, a podcast from Pure Football, purely focusing on the brilliantness that is the Scottish Championship. I'm Chris Sampson and I'm joined by Cammy Anderson. Hello, Cammy.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Looking forward to another podcast.
Definitely. We've got loads to get through from match day seven, and we'll touch on match day eight, the fixtures coming up this weekend as well. But before that, we wanted to touch on some of the breaking news from the league, and we have had a championship call-up to the latest Scottish national team squad, and that player is none other than Lauren Shankland. Cammy, we tipped him for a call-up on last week's podcast, actually, but I don't think either of us thought it would actually happen, and this soon, did we?
No, definitely not. I mean, we both kind of said if he kept it up, yeah, why not, let's give him a go. I think the qualification process is as good as over, really, and we're really looking to really qualify through that playoff kind of March, April time. So I was kind of expecting him or maybe a few other kind of players on the kind of outsides of the squad to maybe get a chance later on. But I mean, if Clark wants to give them a go now, why not? Let's go for it.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you look at his goal record, we were talking about it before we started recording earlier on, and we don't think there's an in-form or as in-form a striker, potentially even in world football right now. I know he's playing in the Championship, and I know we love the league, and it's not the top tier of the Scottish league system, but 15 goals in 12 matches this season for Dundee United, 34 goals in 41 matches last season for Ayr, and 27 goals in 32 matches the previous season as well, albeit that was at League One level. So that's 76 goals, I think, if my maths is correct, in 85 matches since the start of the 2017-2018 season. We'll obviously, unfortunately, talk about how good he was at the weekend in a bit as well, but he's now on course to score 66 league goals this season at the current rate. That is just ridiculous levels of form.
Yeah, I mean, it's simply incredible. And I mean, I've seen a lot of people kind of moan, oh, he's a Championship player, what's he doing in the team? But you know what? He's scoring goals, and we could do with in-form players. We've struggled for strikers that score lots in the national team lately, and what's the worst that can happen? Personally, I think it's quite a low-risk thing. As I've said earlier on, qualifications as good as done anyway, so why not give him a go? And who knows, we could have another star on our hands.
Yeah, I think there's the people that obviously want Steve Clark to maybe try and get a settled side on the go, and we're not saying that he's definitely going to start. I mean, maybe you want to start him against San Marino, maybe lower quality opposition, but and I probably do agree with that as well. Like, I think if you're going to try and get a kind of club atmosphere going, if you like, and a settled side, and some of the players that are in form, get them into the team. But yeah, I don't see why he shouldn't be in the squad at the very least. Especially with the kind of options that are available to Steve Clark to pick from at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's McBurnley and Russell that are there, and I think we can kind of expect McBurnley to be playing in the Russia game just kind of due to sheer physical presence. And, I mean, I know Shankland's kind of bulked up a bit, but he's not kind of got that same kind of physicality about him, whereas I think him and Russell could run ragged against San Marino. And I think a game against San Marino, with all due respect to them, is a game where you really want to kind of be trying out these things. And yeah, I mean, let's see how he does. I'm not wanting to get my hopes too high, but I'm not wanting to just completely write him off just because he's a Championship player. We've kind of spoken beforehand on previous kind of Championship call-ups. John McGinn, from what we could certainly recall anyway, was the last Championship player to get a Scotland call-up. And I mean, you just need to look where he is. So perhaps it's not such a bad idea.
No, definitely not. Definitely agree with you there. One of the other things before he got called up, actually, that we were going to maybe touch on during this podcast today was he's being rumoured with, obviously, a move to Rangers or Celtic now, with them apparently scouting him this season so far. What do you think it would take for Dundee United to part with him in January?
It would be really difficult for Dundee United to part ways with him. They've kind of really kind of balanced the kind of promotion hopes on his kind of shoulders and whatnot. But I mean, every player has a price, and I'm sure if the club kind of, if a club came in with an offer that they deemed suitable, he'd be off. I am struggling to see that happening now. I think it's more likely to happen come the end of the season, where I think he knows himself, if he keeps this up, a better move's probably on the horizon than, say, a move just up a division where he could ultimately be if he just waited a few months. And, I mean, the longer he waits, could be more money and whatnot. And, yeah, I mean, with regards to the Rangers and Celtic interest, I'm not sure that they're the best moves for him.
Yeah, I think if I remember him being kind of linked last season already with some English clubs down south as well. And if he keeps his scoring record up for the next, 2 months until January rolls around, or just over that. So I think he's going to have some interest from down there again. And it probably would take, I think it would take a serious offer for Dundee United to consider it, because, like you said, if he goes, they've got a big task on their hand to try and replace those goals that he's already scored this season. But they'd have to consider it if it was a very lucrative offer for the club.
I don't think there were many that were expecting him to end up at Dundee United in the summer, so I don't know what Dundee United were thinking kind of when they managed to acquire him, but just I'm kind of thinking maybe they knew this is maybe only going to be a short-term thing. And if we get a few good months out of him and we can really get a huge kind of profit on what is our, well, they paid nothing for him, so it's just going to be pure profit if he does go. So, I mean, it might not be such a bad thing if even if it is short term and he just goes.
As I said, we'll talk about him a little bit later on. Unfortunately, he had another good weekend, but let's get into the match action from the weekend then. And Friday night's live game on BBC Scotland was a 1-1 draw between Queen of the South and Dundee. Cammy, you caught this one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And it was a game that, to begin with, I was happy with. When the teams came out, we've moaned in every episode so far about James McPake's kind of systems and stuff at Dundee, but finally he went 2 up top, and I think that's just evidence that he loves the podcast. So yeah, fantastic that he started the 2 up top, but it obviously didn't get off to the best starts with Queen scoring, but Dundee kind of showed a lot of determination to quickly get themselves back into the game.
Yeah, I think I've noted down that Dundee are kind of, well, you maybe touch on that James McPake might be a fan of the podcast, I think it kind of shows that he's still struggling for a settled formation and a front line. Obviously, like you said, Andy Nelson and Kane Hemmings came in for this one, while Danny Johnson, who's obviously their top scorer so far this season, was dropped to the bench. Looked to me like a bit of a 4-2-4 rather than a 4-4-2, because obviously McPake and McDade were kind of flanking those twos forwards and very high up the pitch. But it looked like it was quite similar from Queens as well, on looking at the kind of way that the team started as well, with Baktui and Michael Payton, flanking Stephen Dobie and Jack Hamilton. So the teams kind of lined up quite similarly, I thought, and were probably, that probably showed in the first half, especially with it kind of being quite end to end and quite a few chances for both of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the note I certainly had down. It was very end to end in the first half. And granted, in the second half, that kind of completely kind of just fell off. It just really lost its edge. And I think half-time kind of came at the wrong time for the teams. They were both kind of pushing to find themselves a second goal, but unfortunately, neither of them could get it by the end of the game. And certainly, Dundee's struggles to score were partly because of Robbie McCrory once again starting for Queen of the South in goals. I mean, this is a player with picked up tons, and he just seems to be getting better and better each week.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it on every single episode so far, I think, looking back over the ones we've had so far, and totally agree with you. I think Queens, I've definitely noted that they obviously struggle for goals up front, and we'll touch on that in a second as well, but they actually have the joint best defensive record in the league so far this season. I think they've only conceded 6. McCrory's obviously a big part of that, but Darren Brownlee and Lee Kildare at the back as well seem to have formed a really decent partnership. Kildare obviously coming in this season, and me saying that probably means that they'll get pumped next week by Partick Thistle now, as we'll touch on later as well. The pure championship curse seems to have returned this week too. So let's touch on the first goal then. Like you'd spotted, well, we talked about Stephen Dobie last week. Still no goals, obviously, after this weekend, but he did get on a little bit better, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, we discussed his numbers and kind of his struggles in front of goal, as you say, but he looked a lot more dangerous. A lot of Queen's play was going through him, and it was him who ultimately took the shot that led to Jack Hamilton scoring against, well, Jack Hamilton, which I thought was quite funny. It was one of those weird, hang on a second, I'm sure that happened in the Premiership a few weeks ago with Ross Stewart scoring against Ross Stewart. So it was, that was probably the funniest moment of the weekend's action, actually. And I mean, Hamilton, I think he's only recently turned 19, and on loan from Livingston, he was great to react to that.
Yeah, I think it's a great bit of forward play, just to follow that ball and follow it in and get the rebound and obviously score his first goal for the club. We wanted to touch on Graham Dorans as well. We obviously mentioned last week that he'd signed for Dundee. He made his kind of starting debut in this one in a midfield two with podcast favourite Finlay Robertson. Probably, I thought it was quite a tough time for him to make his debut, kind of expected to do a lot of running in that midfield too, but he did assist for Jordan McGee's equaliser.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with him. Obviously, with everyone knows his kind of troubles with injury and stuff, and I felt he played quite well. There was quite a lot of nice passing, as you say. It was a lovely cross, and I was surprised he did play the whole game in the end, but I mean, for a debut, it was decent enough, and Dundee will certainly be hoping he can build on that.
Yeah, I'm wondering, I think he'll probably suit it a bit better if McPake does move back to that maybe one up front system with three in the midfield. I'm not sure it'd be him sitting and maybe being a kind of deep line playmaker almost, but I definitely see him as part of a two with one behind him, just to give him that little bit more stability behind him. And give him a little bit more of a license to get forward and create for Dundee's forward players.
Yeah, I completely agree there. And kind of moving on from Dorans, I'd like to also big up Cammy Kerr, who I thought got forward really well. We had a few good tackles at his end as well, so certainly a few promising signs from Dundee, even if it wasn't the result they wanted, and certainly wasn't a result that's helped their kind of poor start to the season, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I think, well, just one win in five in the league now. Too early, maybe, to say that James McPake's a little bit under pressure, do you think?
I mean, I kind of said something on Twitter about this, and a few Dundee fans had got back saying, no chance, he's to be given time. There was no chance we were going to be one of the worst Premiership teams and immediately challenge for the Championship. I was looking at it from the outside in, and I thought, given the budget and the kind of players Dundee have on in the ranks, they certainly would have been not 9 points away from their City rivals, United, anyway.
Yeah, I think there's still a long way to go, obviously, this season, but you expect them maybe to start building up a bit of a run, just to see if they can catch and keep up with the teams at the top.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, Ayr and Dundee United starts probably haven't helped them either. I mean, the pair of them have been excellent this season, so it maybe makes things look a bit worse for Dundee. I think McPake should be given time. There was a lot of kind of changes and stuff, but I mean, if they don't start catching up soon, pressure will almost definitely start to build on him.
Definitely. Anything else from this game? We obviously spotted again, we were talking about Scotland call-ups and Josh McPake has been called up to the under-19s.
He's a player that we really like as well, and I didn't think he'd done as much as he had in his previous appearances against Queen of the South, but he looks a really exciting prospect, and hopefully we see more from him kind of as the season goes on. You'd mentioned kind of what else I'd seen. I'd like to say I think I've seen the worst ever banner in a football stadium. Behind the Queen's goal, they had a banner reading, "We know our manners." Quite what they're kind of expecting to show with that, I'm not sure, but not for me, just rubbish.
I like to think it would have some kind of meaning behind it. Maybe a Queen's fan will get in touch with us and let us know what it means.
Yeah, definitely. Please do. If you're a Queen's fan out there, please explain that, because it was just a bit weird seeing that behind the goals.
Let's move on to our second fixture then that we're going to look at, and that is Arbroath 0, Ayr United 3. The first thing that I wanted to talk about for this one, actually, and before I bring you in, Cammy, is that I was raging with myself after last week's podcast because I had my notes right in front of me and I forgot to talk about Alan Forrest's second goal against Alloa, which I thought was a cracking kind of bulleted header into the bottom corner after a lovely lofted pass from Ross Docherty. And Forrest obviously continued his form from last week into this one with Arbroath as well.
yeah, I mean, that's him now got 4 goals in 2 games, and he's looking really good. I mean, overall this season he's got 6 and 7, which is already double what he scored last year in the league. And, I mean, he's on course to probably hit double figures. And, yeah, I mean, he's been kind of a, I wouldn't necessarily say a surprise star. Everyone knows kind of his capabilities, but, and I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but he's kind of living up to his brother James at Celtic. Obviously, everyone knows how good he is, but now Alan seems to be kind of wanting to become the main Forest brother.
Yeah, I think he's probably got a long way to match James's kind of achievements so far in football, but absolutely no kind of questions in my mind that he can't make it at least up to the Premiership and compete against his brother.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a player that I've kind of seen for a few years now in his years at Ayr, and he's always been a player that I've quite liked the look of, so I completely agree there with you kind of saying he's probably able to step up to the Premiership. Certainly I don't think it's to a Celtic or a Rangers. It's probably more of a Hearts or a Hibs or an Aberdeen kind of move, where I think he'd do quite well.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely see him at one of those clubs playing in a similar role to what he's been playing for Ayr, especially this season, because it seems to be working very well. I think I'd noted down that Michael Moffat had a really good game in this one as well. Kind of, he's almost like a withdrawn striker, and he kind of comes in behind, drops in quite deep, links up the play really well, and lets the likes of Forrest, Luke McCowan as well, come in and just play, and get, they have a kind of free role almost, and I think that really showed in this one. Arbroath could barely handle Ayr, and especially in the first half again, like we saw the same as with Alloa last week.
Yeah, so just quickly building on what you said about Michael Moffat, this is something that is kind of been part of his game for a few years now. He joined Mad Dunfermline off the back of a really good spell at Ayr. I'm sure he'd finished top scorer in League One that year. We then brought him in and he seemed to lose his goal scoring touch, but I mean, it was absolutely evident that he's such an unselfish player. He'd far rather get the assist than try it himself. And whether that's because he lost his scoring touch and he just lost confidence in his shooting. But I mean, I think it's certainly benefited Ayr that they've got a player like him who's able to do a lot, really. And he's not, I don't think he's scored too many this season, but having that extra threat on top of Forrest and McCowan, and then his ability to play the ball around as well, is something kind of that's invaluable for many teams at this level.
Yeah, definitely. So, like, Moffat set up Forrest with a chance. Forrest could have had 4, maybe even 5 in this game. Like, I think his first was another absolute cracking finish, after a kind of neat 1-2 with Luke McCowan. He picked up on a defensive mix-up between Darren Jameson and Ricky Little after a ball in behind the defence for his second goal. Controlled that kind of brilliantly and coolly slotted it home, kind of evading 3 Arbroath defenders. And then, so he could have had, like I said, he had another looped header and another a brilliant passage of play from Ayr when a shot just went wide as well just before half time. So, like I said, could have had 4 in this one, and Ayr just seemed to really like playing in the first half of games, which is quite strange.
Yeah, it is bizarre, but I mean, so long as it continues, I don't think Ayr fans are going to be too bothered if they're continuing to blow opponents out in the first half, because that's been 2 weeks running now that they've absolutely decimated their opponents. And yeah, if that continues, I mean, I think it just shows that there was more to them than, well, both Shankland and Ian McCall. A lot of people, ourselves included, I think, were kind of worried for how Ayr would cope once McCall went, but I mean, it's as if McCall never left. They're carrying on and they're clearly not feeling the effect of his departure to Partick.
No, definitely not. And one of the things we also spotted in this one was the play going forward is probably built quite a lot on their solid defence. So like I said earlier, the Queen of the South are actually tying with Ayr for the least number of goals conceded in the league this season, and that's 6. And a big part of that has been down to Sam Roscoe. He got on the score sheet last week, but his defensive numbers have been impressive too, haven't they, Cammy?
Yeah, they have. I mean, you've got the numbers there that you're going to delight the listeners with, but I mean, Roscoe's come on leaps and bounds since joining AIR last season. He looked really good whilst at Alloa. He then returned back to Aberdeen, who were his parent club, then left them at the end of his contract, and he's joined AIR, and I mean, he's improved kind of in a number of areas of his game, and I think he's going to go far.
Yeah, definitely. So we've got an increase this season in his pass accuracy, which is up to just under 79%. He's got an increase in his aerial duels won this season as well, so that's up 6.6% from last season. His interceptions per 90 minutes have increased as well this season by just 0.5, so but still an increase. He has just over 1% increase in his defensive duels won this season as well, which is over 70% in total this season. Obviously a really high number. Is the only one that's gone down, which is probably more of a stylistic thing rather than him particularly, and that's his block shots has decreased, but yeah, like I said, a little bit of a difference from Alloa to AIR last season. So Alloa last season to AIR this season. So really, really positive stats there from Roscoe so far this season in comparison to last season, and something that we definitely have spotted is probably the cornerstone to some of AIR's form so far this season.
Yeah, completely agree there. He's one of many players for AIR this season who have starred. We've spoken a lot on Ross Doohan, we've also mentioned Stephen Kelly, we've mentioned Forrest, we've mentioned Moffat, we've mentioned McCowan, and then Daniel Harvey as well. They seem to be a team that's really on form at the moment, and yeah, they've been really good to watch.
Definitely. One team that maybe wasn't as good to watch was Arbroath. And Dick Campbell was not happy with his team when he was getting... probably because he was getting interviewed with the AIR media team, but he gave them quite a typical Dick Campbell frank interview post-match where he said that AIR probably toyed with them at times, and he hoped his players were as unhappy as he was with their performance. As the other thing that I noted down was he said that AIR were fortunate that Christmas had come early for them with Arbroath's poor performance in this one. So something that we haven't really seen from Arbroath so far this season was a poor performance like that, because they've actually been really good up until this point.
We've spoken a lot in previous podcasts about their home form and kind of how hard it is to play there, but I mean, AIR made it look easy, and one thing I noted in was certainly from watching the highlights of the game, Arbroath really struggled to create chances. They just, from what I can recall, they would have had one or two tops, and you're never going to win games unless you're super clinical, which on the day Arbroath weren't, and I mean, that's that. It's AIR where they went, and yeah.
Definitely. Do we have to talk about the next game?
Unfortunately, I think we might need to.
Okay. I don't even know where to start, to be honest. Dundee United 6, Morton 0. I'm going to start with the defence, because it will get the most scrutiny because they've conceded 6 goals, and of course they should get quite a lot of scrutiny. Peter Grant missed an easy-looking clearance in the first minute for Shanklin's goal, and that just kind of set the tone, to be honest with you. No idea what Jack Baird was doing for Shanklin's third goal. It's a good run, obviously, from Shanklin, and you may be touching that in a little bit too, but he goes past Jack Baird so easily with what looked like to me the simplest kind of piece of skill. Jack Baird just looked so kind of off balance, and it took Shanklin straight through on goal to slot home for his hat-trick finish. Paul McMullen gave Lewis Strapp an absolute run-around all afternoon. I think it was 2 goals and 2 assists for him out of the 6, so a man of the match performance from him, which was funny because obviously Shanklin scored a hat-trick, but Paul McMullen was on absolute fire in this one too. It's actually the midfield that I wanted to focus on a little bit too. So Jim McAllister's 33, Chris Miller's 36, and they were Morton's starting central midfield pairing here. So I said last week that it'd be interesting to see what would happen if Sutton and McHugh both started a game together. I wish I hadn't said that now, because it backfired spectacularly here, as it meant that was the midfield too that had to accommodate it. So I said on the first episode as well, after the Queen's defeat, that Miller's time as a starting option for Morton probably feels like it could be up. A lot of the fans do think this already. I think he still has his uses, but similarly to Dorans, like I was saying for Dundee earlier, like, I don't think it's in a midfield too. He needs a little bit more support in behind him. Just to give the team as a whole that that bit of stability. Rhys Lyon is probably our most promising player, but he gets shunted out onto the right hand side when we seem to play this 4-4-2 at times. So, especially as well with Hoppy's way of playing so far, so obviously I've said this as well already, but it seems to just bypass the midfield. So we need players in there who've got the ability to still win the second balls, to pick up scraps. It was Dundee United who were first, second and third to everything in what was quite frankly an embarrassing performance of so many Morton fans on Twitter after the game, reacting just like not in shock, because we've had some thumpings so far this season, which I'll touch on in a second too, but there just seemed to be no effort at all from any Morton player on the pitch, no pass marks for any of them, and there was so much reaction at the game as well. Fans were walking out, some of the fans got escorted out, fans were giving it to Hoppy and he was apparently giving it back by all accounts as well. So not a good game at all, and like I said, four league away matches so far this season, we've conceded 16 goals, and if you add in the away Betfred Cup defeats against Inverness, Hibs and Motherwell as well, it's 28 goals in 7 away matches. We'll talk about it at the end of the podcast, but next week is absolutely massive against your boys Dunfermline, because it's our home form that's been the saving grace. So please talk about Dundee United, because this one was 6-0 going on double figures.
I want to just say, I think you're completely spot on with Morton's defence. To be frankly honest, it's an absolute shambles. From what I'd picked up on from the highlights and kind of the goals and stuff, the position was absolutely terrible, and it just seemed like United were running through them as if they weren't even there. So that's certainly something that Hopkin has to work on in the coming weeks. And I mean, you mentioned the 28 goals conceded in all your away games this season. I mean, that's just no good whatsoever. So it's certainly, as I say, something that needs to be worked upon. So with regards to United, I mean, they look unstoppable. Obviously, they managed to beat Arbroath 2-1 last weekend, but I mean, I think this was a real statement from them saying, you know what, we're not going to leave anything to chance, we're going to just go out, absolutely steamroll them. And I mean, that's exactly what they did. You mentioned Shankland got his hat-trick, and as per SPL stats on Twitter, that was his 6th hat-trick since March last year, which is quite frankly obscene. We're running out of words to describe just how good he is. And I mean, I've got another note down here about Paul McMillan. You said he was good, and completely agree. A lot of my Dundee United supporting friends have kind of been torn on him, don't think he delivers often enough. If he delivers like that more often, I mean, wow, it's a scary, scary partnership, having him on one wing and then Shankland up top. Peter Pollock was another player who kind of stood out for me, and I mean, yeah, it's just so difficult to see anyone other than United lifting this title. I mean, I know we've said it's early days, but it's just incredible. This is the second time they've managed to score 6 goals in the league already this season, and I mean, judging by how they've performed, it's probably not going to be the last either.
Yeah, I don't even know. This game actually shell-shocked me, like, I'm not going to lie, like, completely. I think we were speaking about it last week. Arbroath had put up an excellent performance at Tannadice in front of a huge crowd and frustrated them, and I just don't see how Morton could go into this and be so, basically act the complete opposite and be so open and let Dundee United kind of run them ragged. That's what they did. They just let them steamroller them, and yeah, it's just embarrassing, and fans are not happy at all, like I said. Remarkably, we're still, I think we're still fourth in the form table. But it's just because of those home wins that we've had so far this season.
Yeah, and I mean, home form's absolutely critical in this league. No game's an easy game, and I mean, travelling to an away game's never easy at all, so you've got to be kind of making sure that you are picking your points up mostly at home, which I think a lot of sides will be looking to do this season. And I mean, that's something I'm going to touch upon when we discuss the Dunfermline game.
Let's talk about it now then. Let's get this one over with. I can't talk about it anymore, and hopefully this weekend makes me forget about it very quickly. Dunfermline 1, Alloa 1. Talk to us, Cammy.
So, obviously, after the excitement of our first league one against Partick last week, this was, it almost felt like we were back to square one. I mean, we went 1-0 down to what can only be described as an absolute wonder goal, and I mean, I've seen a lot of people saying that Cammy Gill could have done better for it. No chance, absolutely no chance. Adam Brown has scored, and I'm going to put it out there, probably one of the goals of the season. He picks it up kind of after Lewis Martin makes a bit of a mistake kind of about the halfway line. The ball kind of comes to him, he runs in and just bullets it top corner, and it was an absolutely phenomenal goal. But thankfully, unlike kind of in years gone by where the Palms were just completely collapsed, and where we would have been just as well going home, given the fact we could so rarely come back having kind of went behind, we showed a lot of determination and managed to get that kind of equalising goal through Kyle Turner, who scored his second in two games. But I mean, it's really annoying considering we had a lot of clear cut chances. I mean, about 30 seconds in, the ball came across, Kevin Nisbet missed what I'd say was a pretty high like XG chance, and I think that kind of set the tone. He then went on to miss a few good chances as the game went on, and right at the end there was a header he missed, and then there was Robbie Dees, who I'll go on to speak about in a second, made an excellent stop when Josh Coley kind of put the ball right across the goal line, and yeah, unfortunately it just wasn't to be. And it's absolutely imperative that next weekend against Ewer Morton that we kind of get back on track.
Something's going to give this weekend. But yeah, I think I agree with you, definitely. I think this was probably Alloa a little bit back to their battling best, I thought, after their poor performance last week against Ayr. Like a kind of typical Alloa performance where they just soak up pressure, seem to pull through it, and then hit teams on the counter, hit them by surprise. And that was definitely a surprise, like you said, when Adam Brown's, I'm going to say 30 yards, kind of looked like it, his strike kind of went straight to the top corner. I think Gil got a hand to it, but like you say, you can't really expect him to be saving that, especially from that far out, and especially how good a strike it was.
I mean, I think he has got a touch, but I mean, you'd need hands like concrete to stop that. There was no chance. It was just one of those perfect strikes that nobody's stopping, and I mean, they happen, and even obviously the fact it was against the Pars, you've got to appreciate goals like that. It's special when a player scores a goal like that.
Yeah, and apparently it was his first goal for Alloa too, after joining at the start of last season too, so a little bit of a sucker punch for you guys. I was impressed with Kyle Turner again. I think we touched on him being a promising prospect on our first podcast, and he started the move after picking up a second ball and just followed the move straight through and finished it quite well. Jamie McDonald kind of wrong footed, and like you said as well, plenty of chances for Dunfermline, and just not being able to finish them. Like Nisbet's header, was that the one that hit the bar that you were talking about?
Yeah, there was the one that hit the bar from the corner, and then there was a cross that I think he headed out and it just went out for a goal kick. But there's certainly no shortage of chances for him to bury one, and obviously scored against Partick, but he's been wasteful a lot recently, and everyone knows how good he is. He was scoring for fun for Rafe last season, so hopefully he manages to find his shooting boots again soon.
No, definitely. I had a couple of things I spotted in this one as well. So I'm a big Greg Kelty fan. I don't know why Kelly didn't really want to give him a shot this season. I think he could probably be one of the players that has an impact, similarly to Dom Thomas, who's obviously just signed a new contract with the club. But I think him and Thomas could really provide something to Kelly, who seemed to have been struggling a little bit with creativity. Kilty's kind of constantly buzzing around trying to make things happen. Maybe it's because he can maybe sometimes seem a bit too keen to get a shot away or make a pass. And he did have a penalty appeal turned down in this one, which I didn't think was a penalty looking back on the highlights.
No, I mean, I didn't think it was a penalty either. There was something, certainly from watching the highlights, that became apparent that it did look like Kevin Nisbet actually handled the ball in the lead up to Kyle Turner's goal, just kind of going back to that. Yeah, it is a handball, I guess, but the way Nisbet kind of hits it down, it just bounces off of Graham's foot right up onto sand, and I think there's ultimately very little that can be done. There were a few kind of claims and whatnot, but I think it's about time Pars kind of got some luck, kind of go their way. That's something that we've really missed this season. I mean, we've had some shocking decisions go against us, so it's about time that Alpine to another club and we benefited from it. These things tend to even out over the season, so I don't think it'll be long until we're victim to another dodgy decision.
I don't think the excellent Aloha highlights, so quite agree with you there. I think they were definitely claiming for some VAR to be introduced in the Championship to rule that one out.
I mean, yeah, I mean, when you're watching it, it zooms in, it's nice and circled, you definitely can't miss it, this.
Yep.
And kind of just speaking on Aloha's highlights, I want to say that they're absolutely superb for being a part-time team. This is a really high-tech kind of highlights package that puts a lot of clubs to shame, multi-cameras, and I just feel it really adds to it. Mad Dunfermline use kind of a behind-the-goals camera for when the ball goes in. I'd far rather see us go for the Aloha approach and have cameras in opposite kind of ends of the stadium or whatnot, rather than having GoPros that ultimately show very little.
No, I agree. I put that on Twitter. I think I was thoroughly impressed and have been over the few weeks that we've been doing it so far. And yeah, long may it continue, and hopefully the other clubs in the league take some inspiration from it, because like you said, it is really, really good quality highlights.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's a few teams out there that have good highlights. I think Inverness have good highlights as well. They've also kind of got that multi-camera set up. So yeah, the better the footage, I mean, yeah, it's great, and that's exactly what you want to see. We obviously lack a kind of sports scene equivalent for the Championship, and me and Chris kind of both hope that through this podcast we provide that, even though it's only audio. But to have a highlights show like that and kind of high quality, it just makes it much better when you're viewing it and watching these things over.
No, definitely, and it kind of shouts the league out as well, which is one of the reasons why we wanted to start the podcast in the first place.
Yeah, definitely. As we've said, we think the league's fantastic. Many others agree in that as well. Just give it some more coverage. BBC are doing a great job in showing one game a Friday night, but we need more. What I can't understand is, on sports scene on a Saturday or Sunday night or whenever it is, why can't they show the Friday night game from the Championship on it? I mean, what difference does it make adding an extra 5 or 10 minutes in when it's already been filmed anyway? It would only further increase interest in our game, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. Until that point, well, probably if that point ever comes, we'll still be talking about it, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah, definitely, fingers crossed.
Finish us up with a little bit of chat on Robbie Deese. I think we've obviously touched on Sam Roscoe as well, but you picked out Deese as having an excellent game for Aloha in this one. After a struggle last week, he was obviously brought off quite early on against Ayr.
Yeah, he had a bit of a howler last week, but I mean, I think that maybe grounded him again, and he looked excellent for someone so young. I mean, he looks really composed, lots of good passing, and he made a lot of good stops as well. We'd mentioned his kind of stops on Nisbet, and sorry for the horrid pun, but he was decent.
I'm not even going to attempt to laugh at that one. Sorry, the laugh came out. It was a pity laugh. I'll give you a pity laugh.
Oh, that'll do. Just kind of building on what I've said about the Pars already, I'd said obviously about how important home form is, and I've kind of done a wee bit of digging into how poor the Pars home form is. Me and a few fans round were discussing why are we so bad, and many put it down to the fact that there's little support at the home games, and while I can agree with that to an extent, I mean, you look at the Dundee game, the support was superb, but there seems to just be a lot of apathy kind of surrounding the team at the moment, and I think if the team are to do better, there also needs to be more kind of encouragement from the stands, but it's certainly hard to encourage when the team's not doing well. And I mean, just me and every other Pars fan hopes that things change again and the good times are back at East End, because I mean, this calendar year we've played 13 home games and we've won just 3 of them and lost 7 of them, and then obviously drawn another 3, so it's certainly not been a fun Saturday afternoon when you're playing at home at East End as of late.
Yeah, hopefully your away trip to Capello is just as not fun this coming weekend, but you can maybe get some form back after that one. Let's move on to the final game that we're going to cover. Like I said, the pure Championship curse returns. I would like to sincerely apologise to Inverness Caledonian Thistle fans for my hot take last week that they could win the league this season. because they got beat 3-1 in this one by Partick Thistle. Cammy, what happened in this one? Where did that come from for Partick Thistle?
I mean, I don't think anyone expected this whatsoever. It was a real kind of shock result. Partick had played in midweek against Celtic and got absolutely gubbed. And, I mean, obviously, that's no real reflection of where they are or where they could have been or anything like that, because you just knew it wasn't going to go well. And McCall had obviously only been in the job a few days anyway. But, I mean, if this is the Partick that we're going to get from McCall, well, wow. I mean, Dario Zanatta was a player who looked absolutely phenomenal to me. He's got a great first goal. And, yeah, I mean, maybe it's just been a case of, I mean, I don't think anyone was going to say Gary Caldwell was the right man, but maybe McCall is the right man to get the best kind of out of this squad, which, as we have said, has many good players in it.
No, totally agree. I think, like you said, Zanatta was somebody that we'd spotted, even in Thistle's poor form so far this season, and he was a really bright spark in this one. Great finish, like you said, into the bottom corner after a nice run down the left, cutting inside on his right foot. The first thing I spotted about this one is there was a bit of a change in approach. I think Tam O'Ware was playing as an anchor man almost in front of Sean McGinty and Stephen Saunders in this one. Probably maybe a bit of a more pragmatic approach for me, McCall, just to add a bit more cover to that shaky back line that we've seen so far this season. And it definitely worked in this one. It didn't really look to me like Inverness had many, or they didn't create that much. I thought their goal was really good, and I wanted to shout out, I mentioned last week Jordan White's kind of target man play. It was him that got Cali back on level terms. The cross was a cracker from Roddy McGregor, who's 17 actually, and this was his first league start for the club after he actually started the Tannock's Caramel Wafer Cup game against Morton a couple of weeks back. So that's a young player to keep an eye on, who's potentially going to get some game time this season. But yeah, Partick just kind of stepped it up once that equaliser went in, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, a real shock result, but I mean, they were definitely the better team. Inverness, from the few chances they did create, I mean, I can't really recall them testing Scott Fox all that much. A lot of chances just kind of blazed into the stands or wide or anything like that. So certainly, a shock result, especially given Inverness's great home form. I'm sure they'd went something like 7 or 8 games unbeaten up there. So, yeah, props to Partick for managing to get that win, and who knows if they'll manage to carry this on. But given the fixture at the weekend, which we'll get into, I mean, they'll certainly probably fancy themselves for it.
Definitely, especially after this one. And Kenny Miller obviously grabbing another goal, Mr. Reliable. Jamie McCart got the ball stuck under his feet for this one, and Miller just kind of was able to nick it off him and run through and finish well past Mark Ridgers. And it was a good week for Rangers loanees as well in the league, so Cammy Palmer finished this one really well with a third goal, and Stephen Kelly obviously scored for Ayr as well with another great finish. So yeah, Rangers loanees doing the business this week as well. Anything else to add on this one before we touch on what's going to happen this weekend with the big fixtures?
Not that I can really think of, no.
Perfect. So, well, there's another BBC Scotland game this coming Friday night with the usual 7:05 kickoff, and that's Alloa, who are at home to Lawrence Shankland and Dundee United. I think I can probably guess what our prediction is going to be for this one, but maybe Alloa might turn up and be a bit stuffier like they were against Dunfermline this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we look back to the Arbroath game for Dundee United, and for large parts of the game, well, up until the final few minutes, they really struggled to break them down. And Alloa are a team, I feel, as well, who make themselves really hard to break down, and yeah, they defend really well, so United will certainly need to be at their best. And even still though, I think it's really hard not to see them winning this. Well, I've mentioned Shankland an absolute ton in this podcast, and I mean, he's bound to score.
Yeah, especially trying to celebrate his Scotland call-up as well with another goal. I'm wondering if Alloa are struggling this season a little bit because of their, well, especially against Ayr, I thought this was quite prevalent, but because they've changed their pitch again and they've widened it a little bit more, I thought Ayr took advantage of that quite well, and Dundee United might as well, especially with Paul McMillan on form after this weekend as well.
Yeah, completely agree. Alloa's pitch is known for being notoriously kind of narrow, and it's caused problems for lots of teams. Certainly from my experiences watching Alloa, they're not a team who play wide, and I mean that explains why the pitch is so narrow, obviously. But it really makes things difficult for teams who do play and try and kind of expand the pitch and whatnot, because Alloa have got it completely sussed out in that and kind of the centre of the park and make things really difficult.
Definitely. We've touched on it so much already during the podcast, but it is the pure championship derby between Greenock Morton and Dunfermline Athletic this weekend. I think we're both predicting wins for our side, so it'll probably be a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, probably, but knowing both our sides as well, we'll probably be the first sides who could both lose to each other in a game. I mean, our form's both going to be up and down, but certainly one I'm excited for. Morton's a ground I always like going to, so yeah, looking forward to it. Hopefully my Pars can get back on track, and yeah, obviously that's going to come at the expense of your Morton, which I won't apologise for, but yeah, fingers crossed for a good game other than that.
Oh, I can't wait till next week's podcast already, either way, to be quite honest with you. Our home form, like I said, is obviously very good so far in the league, unbeaten and won them all so far, and I think you mentioned just before we were recording that your only win so far this season has come away from home, so something might give this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think so, but who knows how this is going to go, but I'm not going to make a prediction. I don't want to jinx myself, so we'll just leave it at that. Hopefully a great game awaits us.
Yeah, John Sutton will score 5, I think, as well. we'll just need to wait and see. Ayr United are playing Inverness Cali. I think Ayr's form has been very good, and Cali will be kind of rocking after that defeat against Thistle, so I'll probably go home win there.
Yes, same for me there. I think Ayr are really going to make it kind of difficult for Inverness. I think they may be able to take advantage of the fact that Inverness will be keen to bounce back, and probably bounce back in really good fashion after the defeat to Partick. I mean, that certainly wasn't something they could have probably envisaged a few weeks back. So yeah, they'll definitely be going for it to try and kind of get themselves back on track, and full expect Ayr with Forrest and Moffat and what have you to take advantage of that.
Dundee are playing against Arbroath. Dick Campbell will be looking for a reaction from his Arbroath side, and they'll make a short journey down to Dundee for this one. James McPake has got to be looking for Dundee to start winning fixtures, and winning fixtures like this against the teams that are their fans are probably expecting them to win in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know we've said how good Arbroath have been, and even still though, with all due respect to them, a full-time outfit such as Dundee, with the money they've got, the players they've got, they should be beating an Arbroath side, as good as Dick Campbell has them playing, as good as he's got them set up and what have you. But no, definitely, I think Dundee should be looking to win this one. But we know just how difficult Arbroath can be. I mean, they very nearly caused a real upset by beating Dundee's City rivals a few weeks back. So, yeah, who's to say they can't maybe do it against Dundee?
Definitely, and I've already cursed Queen of the South for this coming weekend after praising their defence and their defensive record so far this season. So I reckon Ian McCall's going to get another win here for Partick Thistle.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, that victory against Inverness, I think it's going to do them the world of good. And I think they maybe just needed that. It was a kind of a long period where they were doing really, really poorly. And yeah, I think they're going to turn this round, and I can't really see Queen of the South doing much. We've also mentioned their struggles in front of goal, despite their good defensive record. But yeah, Partick win for me.
Perfect. That finishes us up. Thank you again for listening, and thanks again for all the feedback from the last couple of episodes we've had. Cammy, anything you want to add before we head off?
Nah. I can't think of anything.
Perfect, let's go then. I'll see you on Saturday, hopefully, and we'll maybe get a wee picture to send out from the Pure Football account. Maybe one of us will be smiling and the other one maybe a few tears running down their face.
Perhaps that could be the case, but hopefully we get it before the game, before we've fallen out. So yeah, thanks for listening, everyone, and hope you tune in next week.
Cheers, we'll see you next week.